we've done enough fishing to know that not every trip is a great one, but shit, I can't think of a bad one to the North Island.
No, and I've never heard of anyone have a bad trip to the North Island.
G'day and welcome to another installment of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne fly shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques.
It has been some time.
It has.
Since we've,
I think it was the 1st of October the last one was released.
I know that it was a lot cooler in this room.
It was
the last one that we did in this room.
It's like a sauna in here.
Get
our shirts off in a minute.
the glamorous studio that we have in South Melbourne here. It's either -6 degrees or 39 degrees Celsius with humidity. It is very nice.
Very steamy.
Whew, it's so hot in here. All right. So, welcome to another episode of the Fly Fishers podcast. I'm joined by Peter Panopoulos, our one and only, youngest member of staff. And
no, Damien's the youngest.
Oh, that's true.
He's back.
Yeah, he is back. Good to have him back too. But you're our youngest member that's fished the North Island.
That's correct, yeah.
And the North Island of New Zealand is our topic for this episode. I think for all of us that work the floor at the Fly Fisher, we've got a soft spot for the North Island, more than most people, like the average fly fisher, I would say. You've had your second trip there. You are addicted to it. At some point, you're going to have to get to the South Island.
Yeah, at some point.
But you're not desperate to get there, are you?
No. No, but when you get fishing that good.
You've tasted the forbidden fruit.
I have. That's it. It's all over.
It is. Yeah. You know, I guess the thing, and this is what the point that we really want to get across in this episode, is how easy New Zealand is to do in a DIY sense. Now, with the right information, listening to hopefully this episode, reading a few articles, coming and chatting to us at the shop who have been and explored the area a lot and are more than open to sharing the information, anyone can do it. And it's cheap.
Oh, it is really cheap.
Yeah. I think more than ever too, with the cost of living, people are looking for the affordable fly fishing holiday. But the good news, I reckon, is that you can make a trip to arguably the world's best trout fishing destination from Australia on the cheap. We are in a very unique position globally to be able to do that. We're spoiled.
Yeah, we absolutely are. When you've got Americans paying in excess of 10 grand to get there and fish, we're pretty lucky to be able to do it on, dare I say, $2,500.
$2,500.
$2,500, including flights, hire car, food, booze, fishing license,
yeah,
everything.
So, sorry, $2,500. I just want to, for a few days fishing or how many days fishing we're talking here?
I think we had about 8 days fishing, 7 days, no, 7 days fishing, 2 days travel, and you can fish on the travel days if you can.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I think it's more expensive staying at home.
Oh, it almost is. It's when you look at your weekly groceries and
yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's mind blowing how cheap it is, really.
Yeah. So this is your second trip. You've just got back. November, it's a great time to get there. The crowds aren't there. Just tell us a little bit about this last trip that you've had. Give us a bit of a snapshot of your week in the North Island.
It was pretty incredible. That's the best way to sum it up. But looking at the weather forecast leading up to it, they copped a fair dump of rain in our first location, and which was near Opitiki on the northwest coast. Mm-hmm. And that caused the main river there to rise over 2 meters. So they got 60 mil of rain. So and plus, you know, there's no rain gauges up in the mountains. So that sent the rivers right up. But
were you a bit nervous about that when you saw?
Super nervous. And if I wasn't heading over there with Max, who hadn't been there before, who was, you know, put me at ease saying it was the best possible circumstance to have rain before we were going, And boy, was he right. You know, that seeing that weather forecast would have turned me off normally, but, you know, Max just spoke it up so much about, you know, changing river conditions is kind of good. And it produced amazing fishing.
Yeah.
Like we were getting, you know, a dozen fish landed between us a day.
Yeah.
Plus how many we lost, broke off, you know, jumped and lost them. And
how many fish are you talking? You're landing half of them or what kind of ratio?
I'd say, probably landing 2/3 of them.
Yep.
Probably a good way to put it. Yeah, 2/3.
Yeah,
then some of the rivers you're losing probably half because of the circumstances of the rivers. You can't chase them. They're very active fish. They've clearly probably been hooked before or caught before. And if you're not game to chase them very quickly or are running light a tippet, you will break them off. It's just a given, right? Don't go there expecting to land every fish, but you'll land fish. Just persist.
Yeah. I guess the size of the fish and obviously after rain, a bit more current, they're strong fish in fast water. They're going to test every element.
They absolutely, and coming off that post-spawn, they've just been feeding like crazy. There's a lot of bioavailability of food. You know, they're very, very fertile rivers. The amount of insect life is mind-blowing. You know, you've never seen mayfly hatches on rivers like it, you know.
Wow. It sounds like you did quite a bit of moving around. Did you find good fishing everywhere you went?
We found good fishing everywhere we went, and that was the same with last trip too. We found good fishing. Doesn't matter where we were, whether or not we're in the middle of a major town, next to a caravan park, next to a campsite, next to houses, great fishing, you know. And I'm talking about real fish, you know, like 3+ pound fish, 4+, 5+, you know, whatever size class you want.
Yeah. You've, you know, obviously showed us a few photos and some of those fish must be nudging 5 pound, like they're crackers.
Yeah, yeah. We got maybe half a dozen fish over 5 pound landed, and who knows what size of the fish we broke off. But yeah, and that's weighed in a McLean's weigh net, mind you, at which I would highly suggest taking a medium McLean's to New Zealand. It's the only net for it, really.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And even on the medium, you're probably wishing an extra few inches.
Yeah, because the fish, like, you know, sometimes you manage to get on top of them straight away and they're still very green when you got them at your feet. So you need to, you know, be able to get a good hoop size to get the fish in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it keeps the, you know, rod warranty repairs in business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Those sorts of trout. Amazing. You got good fishing throughout pretty much the whole island and you did cover some miles. It almost sounds too good to be true, mate.
Oh, it genuinely is. This time I was there the exact same time last year. And had a cracking first trip to New Zealand. And I was sort of sitting on the plane on the way over being like, oh, I've got this massive expectation set of what the fishing was going to be like. And they were exceeded. So, yeah, it's not very often that happens, you know.
Wow.
It was just amazing. The fishing was better this year than last year. I think that rain really helped the first fishery we were in, the Waiaka, really fire.
Yeah.
Like unbelievably well.
Now, we're going to get a bit more into technique, but do you think you fished a little bit better this trip than you did the last trip? Do you think you've learned anything over your two trips?
Probably fish fighting. That's what I've learned a bit more. You know, Max was really onto me about putting upstream pressure on fish as soon as you hook them. Don't get caught up in, oh, my God, I've hooked this massive fish. This is awesome. You got a job to do when you hook them if you want to land them. Like, get to work. It's not like here where you hook a little, you know.
Yeah,
half pounder, and you can do whatever you want with it. It's you got to be on the job.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So just that fighting of the fish and actually knocking them over is a vitally important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need the right tippet set up, the right rods.
The gear gets tested in New Zealand more than any other trout fishery.
That's what I like the most about it. You're getting a chance to really give your gear a good run and see how it performs.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a very selfish comment to make maybe, but it gives us some self-satisfaction knowing that when we outfit people with the right gear, we know that for these sorts of trips, it's going to do the job and stand up to the harshness of chasing big trout in fast water.
Absolutely. Like sometimes I'll sell people a reel and they're like, oh, the drag doesn't really matter. when you get to New Zealand, the drag matters.
It
like,
does.
Those fish have you on the reel in seconds, like, yeah. like genuinely. You can't comprehend what's going on, and then the line's out of your hand, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, so you do need a good drag over there. It's not just a line holder.
Yeah, and, you know, the amount of walking that you do throughout the day, the hard wading, the often wet weather, it's almost like every category of gear that we sell is pushed to the limit in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely, in varying weather conditions in one day, you know. That's when having breathable gear works really well, because you might get a massive dump of rain in the morning and then it finds up by afternoon, and, you know, you want something that's going to breathe in that heat, because you don't you want to pack light when you're fishing. So having the right gear that's sort of adaptable that does well both is important.
Yeah. Now, look, if I hadn't been to the North Island before, the information I'd be wanting to know is like, how do I do it? You know, I want to just about mirror your trip. I want some success in the North Island. And, so what information do I need to know? So we're going to get into that. First of all, getting to New Zealand to start with, talk us through, you know, flying there.
Flying is standard international flight. Need your passport. We're lucky in Australia. You get through customs real easy. Got the e-gates. No visa needed, of course, if that information is important to anyone. Flights are pretty good. They're normally between $500 to $1,000, depending on how close or far away you book. So you can fly for the North Island either into Auckland or into Wellington. Both locations respectively have access to excellent fishing. I haven't flown into Wellington personally. I flew into Auckland both times, and I think that's the best for the itinerary I researched and planned out before, and that's your best bet. As much as it's fun to get on the ground and be like, oh, where are we going next? I think having a little rough plan of what you're doing before you go, at least your first destination planned out, helps a lot.
Yeah, I think especially when you know, I guess the fishing's probably going to be consistent wherever you go. So there shouldn't be the need to be in the bottom of the North Island and then all of a sudden need to drive to the top of the North Island to get good fishing. It seems like even weather-wise, it's kind of consistent across the whole island. You probably, sure, you can escape bad weather by getting into a different river valley, for instance, but you never need to go further than that.
No, that's right. Exactly. I couldn't believe the difference. We had two streams next to each other that cut that feed off different valleys, and one was significantly higher than the other, even though they've got roughly the same catchment size. You know,
wow.
And they're like the top of the catchments, probably only 50 k's away from each other.
Yeah,
which isn't far. You know.
Yeah, cool.
New Zealand standards.
So what you're saying is have a bit of a plan as to the rivers and the
loose
area.
Loose plan. Yeah, yep. At least a regional plan. Like, yep, I'm going to go to Hawke's Bay, or I'm going to go to Rotorua, or I'm going to go to Turangi.
Yeah,
that's your best bet.
Cool. Good, mate. And the currency over there?
The dollar was at $1.10, I think, New Zealand dollar to Aussie. So slightly better for us, which evens out the cost of groceries and stuff, because their groceries are a little bit more than ours. Fuel's a little bit more. Diesel's the same price, which is handy. Get a diesel hire car if you can.
That's a good tip.
The modern diesels are pretty efficient. Mm-hmm. So you save, diesel's $1.80. Whereas fuel's $2.50, so
yeah,
that's your best bet.
And getting through arrivals and customs with your gear, is it any?
Yeah,
any
New dramas? Zealand. New Zealand, there can be dramas. Make sure it's clean, dry, and I mean actually clean. Brush the dirt off it. Doesn't like my waders have some dirt stains on them, and they don't seem too fussed about
it's
that.
It's a stain. It's not loose dirt.
Yeah, loose dirt. Exactly. Make sure your tent is clean and empty, because I didn't take a tent through this time, but I did last time, and they swabbed that. Fully, like, took it to the lab and everything. Couldn't believe it. But as long as everything's clean and dry, have it on top for them to inspect. All they checked was my boots, waders, and landing net. And I had that all in my targo bag on top of my main checked bag, so I could just unzip it. Here, have a look. They checked it, and we were through quarantine or biosecurity in 15 minutes.
So. Yeah, I guess that's the thing. It's worth pointing out, you're not being interrogated. You know, it's they're used to seeing people. Everyone goes to New Zealand to experience wilderness areas, so they're used to dealing with it, and it's seamless.
They knew what every bit of fly fishing gear was, you know. Yeah. Like, they know what's up. Yeah.
Unlike here, where they still don't quite know what a fly rod is. So let's get into the different areas and talk a bit about the different areas. Start with the Rotorua area, one of the more popular central North Island areas.
Yeah, I really like Rotorua for a few reasons. It's the closest fishery to Wellington that it's very easily accessible and there's a lot of information on. It's got a lot of touristy stuff too. So if you're there with a partner or a non-fishing companion, you know, you've got Hobbiton not far and all the thermal pools.
Got what?
Hobbiton? What's Lord Hobbiton? Of the Rings? Anyway, you're not a nerd. Anyway, you've got plenty of non-fishing stuff to do if you're with your partner or family. But you've also got access to excellent lake fishing and excellent stream fishing.
Yeah.
And you might go, oh, lakes, I've just fished them all winter. Why would I want to go to New Zealand to fish lakes? The lakes are way better than ours. you've got a lot of stream mouths to fish. You've got the chance at, you know, 10, 12 pound fish, Polaroid, readily accessible.
Of course, one of the, I guess, New Zealand's best trophy fisheries being the Nongataha River that flows into Lake Rotorua is right there.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. And the river mouth of that's really productive too. The upper Nongataha does open a little bit later. I think that opens at the start of December, but you can fish the lower section below the bridge on the main highway, which we did great on. Not this trip, we didn't fish it, but last year we caught some fish there. And the stream mouths are definitely worth targeting too.
Yeah. I mean, Rotorua as a lake is just a fish factory in much the same way Taupo is.
Oh, it's insane. Taupo, yeah.
I'll never get it right.
Yeah, me neither. it is a fish factory and it is a pretty well-featured lake. You look at it on a map and be like, oh, it's round and flat, but stream mouths. There's some rocky shores, some weed beds. You just got to seek it out, and it's easy to get around to.
Mm.
You've got Lake Rotoiti. They're there too. Does help to have a boat for that one. There is some wade fishing available, and there's a few other streams that flow into it too, which are worth checking out.
Yeah, all those feeder streams, really. There's none of them that are going to be devoid of trout.
No. It's time for a short break to talk about the legends who bring this podcast to life. Our committed team at The Fly Fisher prepare, record, and edit in-house in South Melbourne. We put huge effort in for you listeners. We hope that means when it comes time to make a fly fishing purchase, you consider us. With your loyalty, we can keep producing these podcasts and bringing you the world's best fly fishing gear. So shop smart and support the fly shop that supports you.
The canal that links the two as well, if you can figure out how to get into that. Swinging streamers and that's lots of fun.
Yeah. Probably worth pointing out in the North Island too, a lot of the rivers aren't written up. Don't expect to be able to find all the information until you're actually on the ground and just go and check it out.
Walk
a stream that's maybe you've driven over because chances are it's going to have trout in it. Why wouldn't it?
I'd always apply the same rule to Australia, northeast Victoria. If it's clear and it's running, it's got trout in it.
Yeah, especially if it connects to a tail race,
water. Or a water that's known to have fish in it. Mm. You know, trout are like rats. They get into everything,
Yeah,
they catch them in some pretty crazy places in New Zealand.
Yeah. So Rotorua, obviously there's so much nice accommodation there as well on the lake. Good Airbnbs. It's a pretty easy place to be. Best time of year, would you say, for Rotorua?
Now's not bad, but I'd probably say December when the Nongataha and everything opens up properly, just so you can fish the whole stream properly.
Sure.
But the lake is productive at this time of year. Smelt come into spawn at this time of year in New Zealand. So it's a great time of year to be fishing lake edges.
Yeah, I guess if you're into your night fishing and river mouth fishing, then it really is a year-round.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of option, yeah. The night fishing at Lake Rotorua is, I didn't do it, but meant to be exceptional. Forbesy last year lost several large fish.
Great. Let's remind him of that.
Yeah, we'll remind him of that.
It is a spectacular region, that Rotorua region. And whether it be winter, spring, summer, you're going to get incredible fishing if you decide to base yourself there for a trip. Let's move on now to the Tarangi region, which of course has Lake Taupo.
Yeah, the the most famous region in the North Island, or dare I say, almost whole of New Zealand.
Yeah.
The Tongariro River, it's world renowned.
Yeah, it's true. I think you could ask any American, you know, about New Zealand and they're probably likely to say like Taupo. They'll probably say Taupo too.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. Taupo.
Yeah. But yeah, just such a prolific area for incredible rivers and great lake fishing as well.
You know, a place is known for trout when there's trout on the street signs.
Yeah.
You know, so that region, you've obviously got the streams that flow into Lake Taupo.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the Taranga Taupo, the Hinamaya, the Tongariro. There's others, lots of others. And you do need a special dock license to fish that.
Yeah.
That's separate from the fish and game license. But it's definitely worth it for the experience. You know, the Tongariro produces these amazing chrome bullets that, you know, could be compared to steelhead, maybe not in size, but how they fight.
Mm.
You know, they're fresh lake run fish.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you look at that lake, it is like an ocean out there.
Oh, it's insane. And it's like 130 meters deep or something. Oh my God. Almost is an ocean.
Wow.
Yeah.
Geez, if we ever get running out of fresh water, we know where to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, the Whakapapa, which, you know, you and I, we both had some spectacular fishing on that river, is also within shooting distance of terrain.
That's 40 minutes to the Whakapapa, 45 minutes,
yeah.
Which is very reasonable. It's a very scenic drive. You can't get sick of doing it.
Mm.
I think we did it for 3 days almost in a row, and it was definitely worth it. You've also got the Whanganui there, which is also great to fish, and a lot of other streams over that way that are worth exploring. But I think if we're keeping it general for a region, that's Taurangi's a great place to base yourself.
Yeah. I mean, these places, there's probably a lifetime of fishing just in these regions, let alone the whole of the North Island.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You can't do it all in one trip, and you don't need to. That's the point. Just get on the ground and start fishing. Okay, so next area we will move on to is the Hawke's Bay or Gisborne region. A little bit longer to get to, little less talked about, but has some spectacular trout fisheries in it.
If you want a bit more solitude, I think that's the place to go. Obviously, there is a lot of talked about rivers there, Mahaka, things like that. But it's just incredible for the solitude you can really find. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've fished there a fair bit yourself.
Yeah. I've done a little bit and it's never enough. But the Ruakaturi was one that I've got a real soft spot for. I just loved how it was probably more than any other water I've fished. I felt like you could fish this every day and not get sick of it because every day was just so dramatically different as we fished a different section of river. It felt like it was a completely different river when you fished it in a different spot. Just so much variety in browns and rainbows in different sections. So, yeah, that's one water that I was a big fan of in that area.
Yeah, I was a fan of the Waiaeka.
Yeah.
That was great, and the Whirinaki too.
Yeah.
The Whirinaki was flowing a bit hard in the forest section, so we resorted to fishing a bit lower down through farmland, but that fished exceptionally well. And I know it does provide good polarizing opportunities with lower water levels, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just so much good fishing out there. And last but certainly not least, we're going to talk a little bit about the Wellington region. So you and I, we haven't fished the Wellington region, you know, but I guess like most people, we don't have unlimited time and it's an area that we haven't yet got to. I read a spectacular article today from Andrew Harding, and it's on the Manic Tackle Project blog site. He mentions a number of different rivers in the immediate Wellington area that he fishes, and it's just so totally underrated by the sounds, like big fish too, and backcountry stuff that's just within such close proximity to Wellington. It's ridiculous. So yeah,
I think there's a fair bit of day trip stuff out of Wellington. So even if you're there on business or something like that, you could probably sneak out with a guide for a day pretty easily and get into some good, genuine backcountry fishing.
Yeah, yeah, and some big lakes there too that are obviously, you know, full of trout. They get white bait feeders down there as well, and yeah, a lot of variety. But yeah, if you haven't come across that that blog, be worth sorting that one out if you're interested in going to that Wellington region. I think you read up on these different things, and all of a sudden your mind's in a spin because you want to do it all. That's the hardest thing with all this. The important thing is just to be ticking off the different areas. You know, don't gravitate back to the same spot over and over, because there's so much to explore over there, and you're going to be missing out if you're not, you know, trying different places. And the same goes if you're someone that's been only fishing the South Island, you are missing out. The fishing in the North Island is every bit as good and
some.
Yeah, maybe answer. Like it is just crazy good. If you're someone that's always traveled to Southland, you've done several trips there, and you're maybe fed up with the designated waters licensing, know that the North Island has hundreds of rivers that are just as spectacular, and you don't have to compete with other people for them. So it is that good. You know, we've done enough fishing to know that not every trip is a great one, but shit, I can't think of a bad one to the North Island.
No, and I've never heard of anyone have a bad trip to the North Island. You know, if it's that gets blown out by rain that much, you can fish lakes and have exceptional lake fishing. And the Tongariro rivers drain so quickly. If it rains in Taurangi, it's actually a good thing because you get a run of fish, fresh fish, which is the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not a weather-dependent sort of thing, you know. Weather, I guess you're probably even wishing for rain rather than the opposite of having dry, low conditions where the fish are a little bit spooky and more lethargic. But, just such an incredible place that, we keep gravitating back to the north. But equally, you know, the South Island has a lot to offer. But, for the purpose of this podcast, we just want to talk up the North Island so much because you just can't go wrong there. Doing it on a budget, it's just so easy. Accommodation-wise, what's the best solution for accommodation?
If you're not afraid of camping, blending camping and accommodation is a great way to do it, only because camping gets you right on the river quite often, you know, and right on pristine water where you can literally fish an evening rise, and their evening rises go well after dark, and then wake up the next morning and start fishing straight away.
Good strategy, hey, like you do your day's fishing, you know, might get back for a beer at 5 o'clock or something like that, have an early dinner and then fish the evening rise after dinner is a good way to go.
Absolutely, yeah, and because you're getting that break in your day, that evening rise is really good.
I think just catching a couple of trout just before you put your head on the pillow, there's nothing more positive than that, is it?
It's pretty nice.
Like, it's the dream. It's like having a house on a river and being able to do that. That is literally the fly fisherman's dream. Let's talk a little bit about New Zealand techniques, particularly North Island techniques, because they maybe are just a fraction different to what you might do in the South Island. But what kind of techniques do you think really vary from, say, we might be used to doing on our northeast rivers?
Fishing really heavy flies, like double tungsten, 3.5 mil bead sort of things.
Yeah.
So big Simon's Uglies, and some people still use epoxy bombs, but that sort of stuff with a trailing nymph behind it, 30 centimetres behind, under an indicator. Yep. That's probably the biggest different one. Just because these rivers are deep, the fish in certain river conditions will pod up in, you know, holding water, and that's the only way to access them. And it sounds like, oh, great, I'm just going over there to dredge rivers, but boy, am I reminiscing watching a strike indicator go down and lifting into a 4-pound fish.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you don't get, you know, like people talk about indicator fishing, but when you see that indicator go at that weird angle and it's just like, oh, yeah, I got you, you know. It's just such a good feeling, isn't it, you know?
It's the best, yeah. Oh. And then it's like if you're fishing with a mate, you're watching his indicator with equal intensity and it's like, strike! You know, it's like it's
you're as invested as if the rod was in your own hands. Yeah. It's that cool.
That's the biggest difference. The other big difference I'd say would be the cicada fishing and the ability to fish size 8 dry flies, sight fish to fish confidently and having them eat it.
Yeah.
That was the biggest mind-blowing thing for New Zealand for me.
Yeah, there is something cool about a big fly on a big trout and watching them eat it in what feels like slow motion.
Yeah, and it genuinely is. They eat it so slowly
sometimes. They do, don't they? They just look at it so hard and then
they don't care. There's no urgency. They know they're the boss. They know they got no real natural predators. Just, you know.
Do you think presentation is equally important for fishing New Zealand as it is for, say, fishing locally?
I reckon in some instances, yeah. Like some of the Polaroiding, things like that does require, you know, in summer low flows, delicate presentation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get caught up on the camo-coloured fly line and things like that. But I floated an indicator tip, an adro line over the top of fish in the clearest water you've ever seen, and they did not care. They ate that fly the same way they would. You know? But I do know come summertime, low flows, the fish have seen more flies. That's when you might look at a clear tip line or longer leaders. But our drag free drifts are essential too. Mm. Yeah. That's the big thing.
Yeah. Which longer leaders can obviously help achieve that.
That's the benefit. You know, you cast a longer leader, less spook, and also more slack in your drift, which is the best thing.
Yeah. So lengthening those drifts, do you think that's like an effective or something, a necessity in a lot of this fishing, like getting that drag-free drift kind of extended rather than just being into that one sort of little sweet spot of the drift?
Especially with indicator nymphing, because some of the deep pools and runs you fish, they'll literally be stacked with fish right from the top aerated water all the way to the tail out of the pool. So if you can get a drift that goes the whole way, you will sometimes catch fish where your indicator's just gone down, you know, last fish you caught. So if you can extend that drift out, it can be pay dividends. I think with the Polaroiding stuff, if you get in the sweet spot in front of the fish, they come up and eat it. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. A little bit easier maybe. Yeah. As far as casting goes, how, you know, like and mending, you know, how do you rate your own mending skills or slackline casts and all that sort of stuff? Do you have to get adventurous as far as casting techniques for getting a drag-free drift with an indicator?
You need to get handy at mending, like definitely, like learn a proper reach mend and, you know, upstream mend straight away as soon as you can. I see why they call it chuck and duck sometimes, like, you know, for steelhead fishing in the States, because sometimes you get a funny wind or something and you got these two nymphs flying past your head. It feels like lead.
Yeah.
You know, bullets.
And collectively, they're almost the same weight as a Clouser minnow. So there's quite a lot of weight in those
flies. And you're throwing them on 6 weights too. So it's not a lot. So yeah, you do. I would actually suggest just heading out to the Goulburn or something, and because you can double indicator nymph on the Goulburn. It's a real good way to fish it, and the Goulburn's probably the best practice for New Zealand. Set your dropper at 6 feet from the indicator, even more sometimes, and get out there and practice casting those big flies. It's worth it, even for a day. You know what to expect. Yeah, cool. And you do, I've tried fishing there with a short bellied line with a short head, and you can't mend running line very well, or at least I can't. So having a longer belly line. Helps.
And that, you know, you mentioned that an adro line, you seem to always harp on about that line, and I have to continually reorder them. What is it about that fly line that works so well in running water?
Shorter front taper. So it turns over the big flies really well. So that short front taper essentially means better turnover, longer front taper, better presentation. When you want to get heavy flies out there, short front taper, and adro does it. It's also got a very, very long head and 2 bellies, I'm pretty sure. So that means you can mend, I think the head length's close to 50 feet.
It's a monster.
Which means you can mend it super easily. You know, Peter Blackmore, who works here, he's onto it. I've seen a lot of people over there, even to the South Island with it, and they love it. It's just so good. And you can fish dry flies with it too. Lengthen your leader out and the dry flies unroll, you know, power off your cast a bit
It's quite an aggressive line. It's maybe not the line that you'd want if you're Polaroiding a fish that's two rod lengths away, but certainly for that indicator fishing getting drag-free drifts, it's just, it's made for
it. It's an ADRO indicator. It's made for indicator nymphing, yeah.
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 And an ADRO, what does that mean?
Anadromous. So fish that swim from fresh salt to fresh.
Right.
So steelhead.
Basically, steelhead means steelhead. Yeah.
And it's akin to steelhead fishy.
Mm.
You know, these fish are from the rainbows over there are actually steelhead fry from America.
Mm.
So they, you know.
Genetically
identical. Steelhead.
Yeah. And, of course, quite big water and a lot of browns as well. They're coming in from a lake environment most often. And hanging around in these rivers, and that's where we're catching them. So, yeah, they're basically anadromous.
Yeah, basically steelhead.
Anything else we need to add there? Like as far as – what about the hire car? What did you do there?
Last time we got a wagon, like a station wagon. This time we got a ute. Yeah, it was cute. Very interesting seeing Forbes climb into a station wagon, small station wagon. This time we got a ute. Both have their merits. The ute probably did well getting us into places, you know.
Mm.
A station wagon can't get you, but you also have to break your rods down every time.
Oh, yeah. There's a bit of frustration.
That's the only frustration there. Having a diesel is the biggest thing with the hire car because it's a dollar cheaper over there. So you're getting we're talking about a cheap trip, but yeah, you know, it keeps the fuel price down a lot. And modern diesels are efficient as modern petrol, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, good. Yeah, the affordability of it is just, it's crazy. You know, I think while Victoria may not be having its best trout season, it's having a more average or standard trout season. Thing is, we're coming off the back of three absolute belters. So if you're feeling like it's a little bit of salt in the wound at the moment, adapting to the more normalized trout fishing conditions at home, do yourself a favor and get to the North Island because it will scratch that itch. I overheard you at lunch. I think Rue said, oh, you know, Peter, do you want to go fishing? And you were like, oh, I'm just not at the moment, mate. Feeling like I'm pretty content with the trip I've just done. You're not desperate to, you know.
No, like you said, it's very rare to come home content from a fishing trip and I'm pretty content, right? Like I am itching to see what our northeast streams are fishing like at the moment.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm sure it'll start to fester soon.
Yeah, but it was just so good. Like it literally on the last day on the Fucker Puffer, we were just like, oh, we've caught enough now. Like, you know, we could have kept fishing for hours, but it got a little bit windy and we're like, let's go make some dinner. Mm. So we did.
Well, there you have it. I mean, if you want to be content with your fishing, travel to the North Island this year and have an absolute blast. Worth pointing out that that New Zealand has had great rainfall all through winter, shaping up to be one of their best seasons.
And no cormorants.
No cormorants there. Yeah, or they get them. They just don't get the plagues like we do.
And they also don't get – they. I think a cormorant also struggles to eat a 3-pound fish.
That's true. That'll do it. Yeah. They beat them with size. Cool. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that episode, folks. This, of course, is the New Zealand DIY Guide. Peter, thank you, mate, for giving us all your secrets. And if there's anything that he's missed that you want to find out more about, then, of course, he's working the floor at the Fly Fisher Tuesday to Friday every week, plus some every now and then. Less some every now and then when he's fishing.
When he's in New Zealand.
we're between, I guess, yourself, Max and me and Blackers, of course.
Yeah.
We've got a fair bit of experience in New Zealand and we are more than happy to help you plan and make an itinerary to do a trip over there. It is that spectacular. So get over there. Thank you for listening and we hope you listen to the next episode. Cheers.
See you next time.